Governor Eric Holcomb wins a resounding re-election victory. Todd Rokita easily wins the race for AG. Plus, Republicans grow their House supermajority and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 6th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb easily won a second term in office in this year's election, besting Democrat Dr. Woody Myers and Libertarian Donald Rainwater. Holcomb punctuated his substantial victory by touting the record of his first term and pledging more of the same for his second.
Hope and growth and opportunity are alive and well.
Woody Myers was subdued, acknowledging that his campaign was a long shot. He did praise big voter turnout.
And that must be nurtured, not further suppressed or ignored.
Donald Rainwater called his campaign a success, saying the significant vote count for a Libertarian sends a message.
It is our responsibility as citizens to hold government accountable every day.
The Associated Press called the race for Holcomb just moments after the last Indiana polling places closed. Was there anything surprising about this victory for Holcomb? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, how big a victory is this for Holcomb?
Well, it's a pretty big victory. I mean, obviously, Indiana ordinarily elects incumbents. That has been the tradition in this state forever, since we've allowed people, governors, to run for second terms. So that wasn't really a surprise. The margin was, and, obviously the campaign that Mr. Myers ran just never caught fire. And the attempts at voter suppression by the governor and Cindy Kirkhofer and Kyle Huffner worked in Marion County, where the voter turnout was depressingly low, not quite 51%. So the long Holcomb lines worked to suppress the vote in Marion County, which obviously Woody Myers, Dr. Myers, won overwhelmingly. So I think the margin was a surprise in some sense. But given the campaign that was launched opposite Governor Holcomb, it wasn't that big a surprise.
Mike O'Brien, we talk a lot about, we usually hear this at the federal level, but we talk a lot about the idea of a mandate. Did Governor Eric Holcomb win a mandate here in any sense?
Well, he won a historic win. He won by 25 points at the last time we counted, and he didn't overwhelmingly lose in Marion County. He almost tied. I mean, he was within two points the last time I looked at it. And if Republicans were really trying to suppress the vote for Cindy Kirkhofer, that we didn't do a very good job of it since she lost. So I think this is a historic win for him.
Well,
him performing so strongly at the top of the ballot clearly helped pull, and he invested in the final weeks of the campaign in some of those battleground state house and state Senate districts that we thought were polling within the margin or were at risk of losing. He invested in those late and pivoted to help support those candidates. So I think that goodwill is going to play itself out hopefully in the legislative session. And his margin clearly helped pull Republicans up from the all parts of the ballot, from all parts of the state.
He didn't get to Evan Vi's 63% in 1992, number one. Number two, I thought the Democrats did a good job on Cindy Kirkhofer by doing the text messages
by unsuppressing
while the
people
were standing
the
vote. In lines. Well, while they were standing in lines for 4, 5, and 6 hours in Marion County, where they were not doing that in other counties because of the way the early voting was not permitted to be in many places here, they had an add-on saying, thanks, Cindy Kirkhofer, your state representative and county chairman, for the fact that you're wasting 4 hours in line. And I think that did her in, and deservedly
sure.
So.
Yeah, it's unfair, but yeah, you did it. Good job.
Nikki Kelly, I want to ask you a little bit about Donald Rainwater here. Donald Rainwater's message on election night was that his campaign sent a message, and we've seen some counties where he did better than the Democratic candidate in those counties. Does does the fact that he's getting double digits, which has never been done or anywhere close to been done for a Libertarian candidate, does that send any sort of a message to Eric Holcomb or Republicans at large?
I mean, it should send a little bit because Rainwater definitely pulled from the Republican base. And if he finishes at about 12%, that'll be like triple the amount any other Libertarian candidate has done. But I do think this was a special kind of year with all the COVID stuff. I'm not sure if it will have a long-lasting impact into next elections.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you, John Schwanes. Will we really know if Donald Rainwater is right and that this Libertarian, these Libertarian results sent any sort of message? Will it take 4 years to know whether that's true?
I think ultimately it will take 4 years to prove that that is true. My gut tells me that I don't have to wait 4 years. I think that this was an unusual election, unlike any other, because of COVID-19. And so a lot of the conventional wisdom sort of just went out the window. But to your point, I don't know how else we would confirm that without waiting 4 years. I would also just point out, you know, we talk about the governor's win. It was very, very impressive. Now, it was not 63%, as Ann points out, didn't hit the mark that Evan Bayh had. But there's another distinction that I think we, by my calculation, Curtis Hill is no longer the Indiana candidate with the highest number of votes received in Indiana election history. I believe that now, that distinction now belongs to Eric Holcomb by several hundred thousand votes. So we have a new leader atop the tally board there.
Well, and it did Curtis Hill a lot of good too.
And also, as the state's population continues to grow, I hope we keep setting that record every single election. The thing that surprised me, I think, was the fact that I mentioned it in the piece that I don't think anybody, we all picked Eric Holcomb to win on the show last week. I don't think anybody had the AP calling that race at 7 p.m. Eastern time. That was the thing that surprised me the most. All right. Well, former Congressman Todd Rokita won the race for Indiana Attorney General this week, securing the seat once again for Republicans. Rokita issued a written statement as he watched election results from home Tuesday after his campaign announced he had tested positive for COVID-19. In the statement, he pledged to provide what he calls pro-growth limited government leadership and vowed to defend police and First and Second Amendment rights. Rokita's opponent, Democrat Jonathan Weinzeffel, also opted not to speak and only issued a written statement. He says he's proud of the issues he raised, particularly his proposal to legalize marijuana and his defense of Republican Governor Eric Holcomb's COVID restrictions. Republicans have now won the race for Attorney General in 6 consecutive elections. Mike O'Brien, is Attorney General virtually unwinnable for Democrats at this point?
Look, Indiana's a Republican state, but it wasn't that long ago we were talking about potentially losing that office with the wrong candidate, with Curtis Hill. I mean, that was the big concern coming into the summer, that he was polling underwater. His unfavorable ratings outpaced his favorable ratings. So going into the Republican convention, there was a concern that if Curtis Hill came out of that he loses the general election, because that's what that was the data we were showing. Now, when you get into such a complete and thorough win that Republicans in Indiana had on Tuesday, where you have your candidate for governor winning by 25, you have Donald Trump polling in the high teens, does that just wash all Republicans in statewide? Probably, right? But in another year, with a candidate with the issues that Curtis Hill had, that's not to say that the issues that Curtis Hill had weren't legitimate and should have disqualified him for office to begin with. So I still think Republicans made the right decision in the summer. But in another year, another set of circumstances, if those top ballot races are closer, then you could lose some of those if you pick the wrong candidates for these offices. And that's always what we've got to be thinking about, is putting the right people up for office.
To that point, Ann Delaney, for Democrats to win a race like Attorney General, one of these statewide elected offices that isn't governor or U.S. senator, is it going to have to be almost a fluke or a bit of luck?
No, it's going to have a strong gubernatorial candidate in a good year is what it's going to have. And we've done it before. We did it with Pam Carter. First African-American woman elected attorney general in the country out of little old Indiana. So it takes the right candidate. Mike's right about that. It also takes the right year and the right top of the ticket. What's interesting about Rokita's victory is he's going to now try to catapult this into being the next gubernatorial nominee. And, of course, we all know that the governor is going to dump Suzanne Crouch as soon as he can because, you know, she served her purpose as being the little woman behind the big man. And like the Republicans always do, you can have a woman for lieutenant governor, but you certainly can't run her for the top office because that wouldn't be feminine. So they'll get rid of her and they'll probably
just add a candidate for lieutenant governor who's a woman.
You'll have just put her, you'll put Carl Hupfer, Hupfer in there because he's the program. But it's going to be interesting to see whether Braun decides to get in there because he's shown an ability when you have a multi-candidate primary to be able to eke out victory. So it's going to be interesting to see them maneuver around this. But I don't expect an awful lot of cooperation between Rokita and Governor Holcomb.
Mike O'Brien, I want to ask you about that, although I just want to point out, I don't think anyone in her life has ever referred to Suzanne Crouch as a little woman.
I know she's tall, but she served her purpose for the Republicans. They can show they're inclusive up to a certain level, but certainly not above that.
Mike, I want to ask you about something that Ann brought up right at the end there. One of the things that both candidates, including Todd Rokita, ran on was working better with the legislature and the governor's office. Do you anticipate that that relationship improving now?
Rokita's work in the legislature can only go up, but I think if he's smart, he's looking at Eric Holcomb and the way he's led and that model in a 25-point victory. And saying, hey, it's better to be friends with this guy than enemies. And it's better to look at the example and how he's run that office and how he ran for election that works in Indiana.
He's going to say he's a lame duck. And he's going to say that to your libertarian issue, he's going to join with those in the legislature who are already talking about trying to curtail the governor's powers to enforce mask mandates and the rest.
Well,
he'll
I want to
appeal to the libertarian wing of the party.
I want to talk a little bit more about that later in the show. But first, John Schwanes, something about this race that surprised me was, while I, on the show, as many of us did, picked Rokita to win, it ended up looking like what it's looked like in the past two decades, which is a baseline race. If you're a Republican, you voted for the Republican. If you're a Democrat, you voted for the Democrat, almost regardless of the candidates and the people involved. Is that a surprise to you?
It was to a certain extent a surprise. Clearly, the margin of being what it was really did surprise me quite a bit. I thought we would see Weinzapfel running a stronger race. He already ran a race, stronger results, let's say, because he is a very credible candidate, well-known, well-funded, experienced candidate who knows the political infrastructure, had grassroots support and organizational strength. That surprised me. I think it simply is the notion of such strong numbers when you look at the presidential win and the margin, which while it wasn't as big as 4 years ago, was still, what, instead of 19%, it was 16 or 17%, yeah. Still huge. Yeah. And then you look at the, you know, historic numbers that the governor pulled in. I don't know. Jonathan Weinzapfel probably, you know, was doomed, but I did think that there might be more. For him there. Now, I would not write off that office for Democrats simply because Ann points out about Pam Carter. It wasn't just Pam Carter. It was two successive Democrats that won election, too. So there was a three-time run there in the Evan Bayh era. So we really need, basically, Democrats need another Evan Bayh type person to lead the ticket.
Good luck.
Enter Bo.
I was just saying, enter Bo Bye. Enter Bo Bye. Nikki, I want to ask you something else that we heard in this conversation, which is the idea that I don't think is, that I think is shared by more than a few people, that Todd Rokita will use this to run for governor in 4 years. Is that something you think is not only possible, but perhaps even likely?
Absolutely. And he's got himself a statewide office. He can, you know, sort of stay in the media and getting some attention while working the, you know, grassroots support. And so I think it's absolutely his plan.
All right. Well, it's nice to be talking about 20. It's nice to be talking about 2024, even as 2020 is technically still going on. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: is the Indiana Democratic Party still relevant at the statewide level? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, we asked you who will win that race for Attorney General, and it didn't look like this in the final results. 41% of you said Todd Rokita, 59% said Jonathan Weinzapfel. Basically flipped those, and that was the final result. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. while Republicans strengthened their grip on the Indiana House of Representatives in this 2020 election. Democrats came into this fall's election aiming to break the Republican supermajority in the House. That's when one party has enough seats, more than two-thirds of the chamber, to conduct legislative business without a single member of the minority party present. But Republicans grew their supermajority by four seats. Democratic incumbents lost races in Northwest Indiana, South Bend, the Muncie area, and Southern Indiana. And Dems were only able to defeat a single House Republican in the Southeast Indianapolis area. In the Senate, Democrats were able to pick up a seat in Northeast Indianapolis, while Republicans held on to the rest of their races. But the GOP still holds a supermajority in that chamber, too. Republicans have had a supermajority in the Senate since 2010 and in the House since 2012. Nikki Kelly, was this a surprise to you?
It was. I think I said, along with other people, that I thought the Democrats might pick up some seats in the House. So to see the Republicans actually gain in their majority was definitely a surprise to most of us.
John Schwanes, I wanted to ask you, Indiana Democratic Party Chairman John Zodi today said that national headwinds were somewhat to blame, a big part of the what's to blame for Democrats losing seats in the House. Do you think that's an adequate explanation?
It goes part way. I don't think it's the entire explanation, because I think, and we've talked about this on the show many times before, when you look at legislative races, particularly in the Indiana House, you're talking about, you know, races where most people are familiar with the candidate, especially in the more rural areas. This is the local, you know, high school football coach or the local insurance agent. You know, they've held office before. And I think people draw conclusions based on their you know, very personal interplay and interaction with those individuals over the year and their regard for those individuals. Now, that's not the only factor. And I don't think the national headwinds are the only factor. Put them together, though, and you get what Nikki said was a surprising margin for to the advantage of Republicans.
Mike O'Brien, and I imagine this will not be the last time we talk about this issue in the next couple of months, but a 67 seat supermajority to a 71 seat supermajority, will it change significantly the way Republicans govern in the General Assembly?
I think it does. So I think this was a surprise on election night. I think Republicans did fully expect to lose some seats. And frankly, the ones that we expected to lose were in suburban areas, potentially Northwest Indiana, but in areas where moderates have to run to get elected. And it losing those seats, it could potentially force a conservative caucus further to the right and dilute, and reduce the number of moderate candidates you have in that caucus. And so by Todd Huston winning by such a large margin, Jerry Torr, Donna Shively on the north side of Indianapolis, Hal Slager in Northwest Indiana, Dale Devon in Northern Indiana. Some of these moderates in the caucus, they've grown those numbers now, and it allows you to maybe dismiss a more conservative or right wing, potential set of issues.
Ann Delaney, I think a lot of Democrats expected the Eric Holcomb to be reelected. I think, despite a lot of people thinking the AG's race would be closer, I don't think Todd Rokita winning is a huge shock. Is this the biggest disappointment for Democrats in Indiana this year?
Oh, I think it's a big disappointment. And the one thing that John forgot to mention is with gerrymandering. The gerrymandering done by computers has been taken this to a different art form. It almost doesn't matter. And I point to the newly elected Republican for the first time in the southern Marion County and northern Johnson County, who has rants that call the Catholic Church a cult and anti-Muslim rants and walks around the state house with pictures of aborted fetuses, is now part of that Republican caucus that Mike thinks is going to move more moderate. I don't think so.
So I was talking about specifically.
I think what it's going to do is push them further to the right. You know, the problem with the gerrymandering, and I've said this from the beginning, is that when you have one party rule, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's what you're going to have with this. You're going to have people running. It doesn't matter what the voters want. It's what they're worried about in primary elections. And as a result of that, you're going to have a much more right wing. Houston can only do so much to hold back the forces of that caucus. And I really think it's a big disappointment for Democrats. I think it's a big disappointment for voters, because we're not going to deal with funding issues for schools. We're not going to deal with COVID the way it should be dealt with. We're not going to deal with infrastructure and, and the needs that we have in this state, because the right wing is only concerned about cutting taxes and having a deficit and cutting back government power and abortion and gay marriage and those kinds of issues. So I think it's going to be a very tough time to be a Speaker of the House if you're as moderate as Houston is.
Well, I'll say this. Speaker Bosma used to talk about how having a 70, 71 seat supermajority wasn't what he would sometimes prefer, that having something like 60 was a lot easier to manage. We'll see how Todd Houston handles that opportunity or challenge, depending on how you want to look at it. Well, Governor Eric Holcomb said this week his substantial reelection victory will have no impact on his decision-making around COVID-19. Holcomb faced sharp criticism from both his political left and right over his handling of the pandemic, but he was also reelected by a huge margin. Holcomb says politics didn't drive his decisions before the election and won't now.
This is the only campaign that we're running here, is a campaign to try to save lives and get through this.
And Holcomb, as he has done for months, stressed the role of individual responsibility in addressing the pandemic.
If we put this little inexpensive piece of cloth and prevent the airborne transmission of this virus, we will be able to collectively, for the common good, individual by individual, slow the spread.
Holcomb repeated that he doesn't believe reimposing statewide COVID restrictions will effectively curb the virus's spread. John Schwannis, does Holcomb now have the leverage he needs in what many people anticipate will be a fight with the General Assembly in the upcoming session over these emergency powers that he has been using over the last several months?
I think he's probably well positioned. There will be, undoubtedly, for the very reasons that Mike just articulated a moment ago, there will be factions, sort of the libertarian faction within the Republican Party, that want to remove the governor's emergency powers. But I think he can respond, A, privately in meetings with lawmakers, hey, look who won the votes. I have a mandate. And I think there's a legitimate claim to that. And also he could point out that he exercised it with some, he was judicious in his exercise of power. Even in the face of criticism from a lot of public health officials and a lot of Democrats. So I don't see that he's going to have his power stripped during the coming session.
That's a big prediction. We'll talk a lot more about this as we get closer to session. But Nikki Kelly, if Eric Holcomb does in those private meetings say something to that effect, like we're talking about, that, hey, I want all of these votes. I'm clearly very popular. I have this mandate. Will lawmakers, quite frankly, listen or care?
I don't think so. There's not a single Republican I've talked to who doesn't want to curb those powers in some way. And I'm not talking about taking them all away. But, you know, to have a 7-month public health emergency with no, you know, weigh-in by the General Assembly is just not going to happen in the future.
Mike O'Brien, how does Eric Holcomb leverage, can he and should he leverage his electoral win into those kind of conversations in the General Assembly?
One, I think there is, you know, a lot of lawmakers who are reasonable lawmakers, I think, are bringing legitimate questions about what was the context of the Emergency Powers Act being passed to begin with. We were thinking tornadoes and floods. We weren't thinking, you know, years long potentially pandemics, where these powers are in effect, and how do you balance those, and maybe what are the check-ins on it. I don't think that's an illegitimate conversation. But I don't see the legislature coming in and just repealing it. And that's a pretty blunt way to react to what are legitimate concerns on the ground. I mean, we talk about, like, why isn't there a mask mandate, an enforceable mask mandate? Why aren't we going back to stage 3 and these other questions? I did some campaigning around the state in the final week of the campaign. You go meet in a truck stop in northern Indiana to go door to door somewhere, and you're not going to find a lot of masks. You're not going to find a lot of people that care about the government coming and telling them what to do. And legislators represent those districts, and they come to Indianapolis and reflect that. And there's a reasonable conversation to have there, but it can't be one or extreme or the other, that we're not doing anything or we're going back to locking down the state.
And Delaney,
I think that's
quickly,
what you'll see in the General Assembly.
And Delaney, quickly, we've talked a lot on the show about should Eric Holcomb reimpose some statewide restrictions. He said that won't be what it takes to curb this virus, but is he really going to have much of an option in the next few months after the General Assembly convenes?
Clearly, I mean, if he has any leadership, which of course he's demonstrated that he doesn't, but if he wants to be seen as having any leadership on this issue, he has to not roll it all the way back, but restrict the number of people that can be in a get-together and do something substantial about masks. You know, even the inept coronavirus task force out of the White House has said Indiana has to take action. We're up to almost 5,000 cases a day. And having him tell us that, you know, when you get to the hospital, we can take better care of you is not exactly reassuring.
All right. Well, that'll be, as I said, something we're probably going to discuss a lot over the next few months as we head into the legislative session, which Organization Day is just a couple weeks away, which is hard to believe. That is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, please wear a mask, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.